Greetings, friends. I'm John Haspel. This is a Dhamma talk on the Nidana Sutta. In this sutta, the Buddha teaches the importance of being mindful of actions to recognize and abandon the three defilements of greed, aversion, and deluded thinking, all rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths. This talk includes Sangha Q&A and discussion and was recorded at Cross River Meditation Center in Frenchtown, New Jersey on October 25th, 2016. This talk concludes with Metta Intentional Meditation. If you find benefit from this talk, please consider a donation. Thank you. Peace.
So the Nidana Sutta is very similar to the Lakana Sutta in that the focus is on developing mindfulness of right actions or our actions and letting those actions inform us as to what we're holding in mind. And it also specifically addresses the three defilements of greed, aversion, and deluded thinking. In the Nidana Sutta, the Buddha focuses on recognizing and abandoning the three defilements, can't say that word tonight, the three defilements of greed, aversion, and deluded thinking. All three of the defilements are rooted in ignorance of the Four Noble Truths and the resulting ongoing self-referential eye-making. This is also a simple teaching on conditionality that is often overcomplicated due to a misunderstanding or misapplication of dependent origination. Keep in mind that another word for greed is craving, and that craving is taught as the second noble truth and as the origination of unsatisfactory experiences. The Buddha uses the metaphor of a healthy and viable seed to show the potential that a well-concentrated mind has to develop awakening or full human maturity. The Nidana Sutta. The Buddha teaches, friends, there are three causes for unskillful actions. Greed is a cause for unskillful actions. Aversion is a cause for unskillful actions. And deluded thinking is a cause for unskillful actions. And you can see that all three of those relate to wrong view, and as right view develops, the defilements fall away. Any action that is born from greed through conceit or eye-making will bring further confusion and suffering as individual life unfolds. Any action that is born from aversion through conceit or eye-making will bring further confusion and suffering as individual life unfolds. Any action that is born from deluded thinking through conceit or eye-making will bring further confusion and suffering as individual life unfolds. Just as a healthy and viable seed, when planted in poorly prepared soil and attended to improperly, will prove unsatisfactory, in the same way, greed, aversion, and deluded thinking will bring actions that will develop unsatisfactory experiences or ongoing dukkha. Now, when actions are born that are free of greed, free of aversion, and free of deluded thinking, confusing and unsatisfactory experiences will not develop as individual life unfolds. Just as a healthy and viable seed, when planted in well-prepared soil or well-concentrated soil, those weren't the Buddha's words, those are my words, and attended to properly with refined mindfulness, again my words, will grow and increase in abundance. In the same way, one well-prepared with the proper conditions will develop lasting peace and happiness. A person ignorant of their own actions, born of greed, aversion, and delusion, must experience the result of their actions. One who has developed wisdom and ended ignorance, this individual abandons greed, aversion, and delusion, and experiences clear understanding and lasting peace and happiness. That's the end of that pithy sutta. I've been waiting all day to use that word, by the way. So it's a very concise teaching, but like everything that comes out of the Buddha's mouth, it gets right to the heart of the matter. And it speaks to recognizing these three defilements that can only grow out of eye-making, out of self-referential views. If I didn't have a self-referential view, there'd be nothing to be greedy about, there'd be nothing to create aversion from, would there be? And I wouldn't be rooted in deluded thinking if I thought that I am the all and the end-all. You know, that is the whole part of the problem. And the Buddha's teaching here to look at that closely, recognizing what is unskillful, what leads to more additional defilements, and what doesn't, and focus on that. And it's really that simple. Again, the problem goes back to that old thing, conditioned thinking, you know, or confirmation bias. that thing that we all have to overcome. But again, the importance of the Eightfold Path, that's why the Buddha taught an Eightfold Path, so that we could develop that refined mindfulness rooted in concentration and recognize unskillful actions in thought, word, and deed. And in doing that, we directly change our behavior and directly change our view. It's up to us. There's a point that this is about and the point that I'm trying to make. It has nothing to do with anything outside of ourselves. There's nothing in the Dhamma that relates to anything outside of ourselves. It all points us back to inside and developing a clear understanding of Four Noble Truths. How dukkha arises, craving and clinging originates and perpetuates dukkha. And then to remember that it's possible. That's that third noble truth, the cessation of this process is possible, is where all the power lies. It reminds us, yes, it's possible for me as an individual to end this ongoing process that keeps me stuck in confusion, delusion, and ongoing unsatisfactory experiences. And so develop for myself a life of lasting peace and happiness. And when I first understood that one thing, it changed all of my Buddhist practice because it put the focus where it needed to be, directly on what my thoughts, words, and deeds were developing in my own life. And that was the most important thing. It had nothing to do, and for years I engaged, it had nothing to do with a lot of rituals or certain beliefs in different deities or anything else. And I'm not putting those practices down. For this Buddhist, it was when I learned that the whole practice related around the Four Noble Truths that it changed everything and it made an effective practice for me. And again, that's why I teach, and that's what this pithy sutta is all about.
Say it one more time.
What, pithy? I think I slurred a little. It's a good word, though, isn't it? It's kind of like dependent origination. It's often understood, but it needs concise. So this was certainly a pithy teaching. Are there any questions about this teaching?
The greed and aversion echoes the lust and ill will that you'll find in other sutras.
Yes.
Are they also known as defilements, or is it just, I'm trying to think now if they were ever mentioned as the defilements are always greed, aversion, and deluded thinking?
Well, remember that's the English translation of Pali words.
Hmm.
So desire is just as appropriate for greed. Craving is greed, you know. Tanha, the actually, I think tanha is a Sanskrit word, not a Pali word. But tanha means thirst, but not always in a literal sense. It means that intense craving, tanha. So that tanha or craving is still part of aversion. Greed and aversion are two sides of the same coin. When we are averse to someone or some situation, it's wanting that person or that situation to be different than they are. Craving, wanting something, desiring something. And then once we decide what that is that we want, this is where dependent origination comes in, but we don't have to get into that because it happens almost out of time. As soon as we start craving or desiring something or are greedy for something, we immediately attach to it. So craving and clinging are really an individual process with two components. Is that clear? You know, we can't help but make an identity over the things that we desire or that we're greedy for, that we want more of. You know, that's just how it works. They go together. There's not many publications where you hear the second noble truth portrayed as craving originates and clinging perpetuates. The only reason I say that often is just to make it clear that there's two aspects of that same action that take us down that road of confusion, delusion, and suffering. Good question. Good point. So the defilements come up all throughout the Buddhist teachings, all throughout the Pali Canon, using different words, but ill will is certainly aversion. You know, it's just another word for it. But when talking about the three defilements in context, it's usually put out that way. You know, greed. Sometimes the word hatred is used to put a strong point on aversion, but you know, it's all kind of the same thing. Any other questions or comments?
It seems like that selfing refers directly to this process of greed as craving, deluded thinking, and aversion.
Oh, yeah.
And that, selfing as the process of clinging, really, or perpetuating an ongoing identity that wants.
Yeah, that is stuck in greed. It's another word for it. The initial craving that sets this whole thing in motion, it's getting a little bit, not really mystical, but a little bit hard to contextualize, is craving for existence. But it's, we got to remember, we're not talking about a grand cosmic kind of deal here. It's craving for the existence of an individual permanent personality. So in the literature, it's often portrayed as craving for existence, and it doesn't explain any further than that. And so that's often misunderstood, that it's craving for existence that gives ourselves a physical body that causes us to be born. That's not it. It's craving for the existence of a permanent individual self, and usually, by extension, craving for an individual soul, both of which the Buddha taught and realized upon his awakening, that's not possible. It's only your view that clings to that and craves for that ongoing existence. And once that's set in motion, dependent origination, once ignorance gives rise to that fabrication that I can have an existence, a permanent existence, then the whole chain of dependencies follows and we end up in confusion, delusion, and suffering. So it's a really good point to bring up. You know? It's craving for wanting to be a permanent me and establishing me through my views rather than recognizing. And even the sutta points out that all human life, all physical life, all life in the cosmos is an ongoing process. And it's an ongoing process that's rooted in impermanence, and that means that each moment holds the potential to develop towards full human maturity or to ignore what we know and continue confusion, delusion, and ongoing suffering. And that's the whole game. Maura.
I'm going to give just the example of one of the many conversations we had last night.
Uh-oh.
Because something that you said or that you read in that sutta about out of actions that spring from that confused, deluded hatred, greed, hatred, or delusion, any actions that arise from that view will cause difficulty, and certainly difficulty for this experience and others. And you know, so I've just moved, and I'm having a tremendous amount of practical difficulties during the move. And it's really unpleasant, and I find it quite distracting and challenging. So, anyway, one of the things was that this self was feeling like abandoned by everyone, my previous owner, my realtor, my present owners, you know, all this. And it was very painful. There was a lot of, you know, proliferation of suffering. But I would catch it and, you know, try to work with it. But one of the specific examples was last night, my previous owner had not responded to me about a security deposit. I'm just making this very concrete. And I had really bent over backwards to try to make things up. But that was the whole thing. I had. He didn't. I need. You know, I could see it. And so I went to send him a text about it, and I caught myself looking at my view, my intention, right speech, right action. And I decided not to send it because I felt that my intention was to create a self that was going to try to make another self feel bad. And I was like, that's not in alignment with my practice. And waking up, so I restrained and I abandoned that action, and it felt much better to do that. So fast forward 24 hours later, I just got a text from my previous owner about another matter. And I was so grateful that I hadn't, because I thought, I'm trying to harm him, and he's not doing anything. Like, there was a little harm. All I was going to say is, you know, what are you going to get back to me? But, like, what was my purpose in that? And so I didn't create further suffering for him. Who knows what he's going through? And I didn't create further suffering for me. And we could enter into this new, somewhat acrimonious exchange, or uncomfortable, but clean, you know, and it was clean, and I just, so I think in my practice what I try to do is really look at what are the effects of abandonment of an action feel like. If I'm going to take the action and I feel tight and self-righteous, probably not the right action to make even. And if I can let go of it and I feel freer and lighter, then I know that it's the right, I'm moving in the right direction of awakening. And that's what I have to share.
Oh, thank you. I mean, you just explained in a very practical way how it works. You know, again, nothing mystical or esoteric. When the stuff is hitting the fan is when we need it the most, and you applied it beautifully. Thank you for sharing that. Mm-hmm. Any other questions on
I had,
the...
I had there were scratch marks on the phone now.
is it still intact?
I'm really gracefully. And then a ball forward on the head and a ball back in it. But I knew it was
there.
Anyway.
Thank you.
No saints are here yet.
That's all right.
But the awareness is good.
Well, and all that you're describing is part of the First Noble Truth. There's just, dukkha occurs in this world. If you don't want it to occur anymore, mm-hmm. you know, don't come back no more. Because it's inherent in this world. Bonnie.
Yes, but then I struggle with the times when the difference between causing more stress to someone and also standing up for yourself, and sometimes having to say the truth or to say things, and because sometimes I, you know, big reaction and I want to say something or respond to something, and I certainly think about how I want to say it, and especially if it's crafted through an email, particularly I never want anything to leave my desk that I wouldn't say to, you know, anybody, or so that, but, you know, so I struggle with when's the time to hold it and fall, because particularly if, you know, there's been times when maybe I didn't stand up for myself when I needed to, or to particularly to not, I mean to, but to be truthful and it makes sense, you know.
Yeah, developing a Dhamma doesn't make one a doormat. In fact, it shows us how and when to act. The incredible freedom that comes from developing the Eightfold Path and knowing that you have integrated it into your life as a framework, you know you're good to go. And if you're acting within that framework, specifically with right intention, the intention to do things that are useful, helpful, and will do no harm, you're good to go. Some situations may tell you, well, this is just the person that I don't want to interact with. But sometimes you have to
interact with anyone.
You have to interact with someone, but you do it from that, from right view.
Right. Yeah.
And then you're good to go. If that other person then continues to be upset, there's nothing you can do about that. And then you recognize that's part of the First Noble Truth. Part of dukkha occurs is that it occurs through other people, and it seems like it's happening to us. But when we have taken a dispassionate view of our life, we're no longer personalizing everything, then it can happen to us. It happens near us. But, you know, Frank.
I would just say, because I am quite vociferous in what I have to say to other folks. So for me to restrain is sometimes, you know, is the bigger thing. So when I caught myself in that situation, it was the intention. What did I want? By adding another line, all right, the question is when is the security deposit going to be forwarded to me? but the additional line was, I was really accommodating to you. So that was, my intention was to push an issue that didn't need, that didn't need to say, I didn't need to say any of it because it will resolve itself, it really will. So I think that's the big thing, what's the view and what's the intention, and, you know, I always think if I'm trying to make somebody feel badly or guilty or pay attention to me, that's wrong view, wrong intention.
Yeah, if you want to know how to act in any situation, develop the Eightfold Path. Frank.
I had a connection with something that you said. You said once you started to get an understanding internally about the Four Noble Truths, everything had changed. Something like that.
Yep.
And I think when I got here back in late December, early January, you know, I was kind of feeling a little bit empty inside. That's the only way I could explain it.
Yeah.
A disconnection with self. And I had the same insight, I think, once I got a good understanding of the Four Noble Truths and the fact that, you know, the three marks of existence and that emptiness and brokenness that I felt that often came with greed, delusion, and aversion was because I was lacking substance of trying to establish this non-self. With lack of a better term, I didn't know what it was.
Yeah.
In this impermanent environment. So then, once that understanding was established, everything that needed to change in my life changed only because of the way that I see things differently.
That's right.
And then once that had transformed, then I was no longer trying, you know, the greed, the aversion, the delusion kind of disappeared from my life. And I could see, I had more clarity of perception. And then when that happened, I didn't need to change other people's opinions or views because I knew where they were coming from.
Yeah.
So even though things still happen in life and I need to right a wrong, I do it from a place of love and not from a place of hatred.
Yeah.
And that changed everything also.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That was my experience with it.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that with the Sangha, Frank. That when you understand it and you start applying it within that framework, it becomes pretty clear. And you don't have to do a lot of undoing. The greed, the hatred, especially the real gross stuff, just falls away. We don't have to address it. We don't have to figure it out. It just falls away because it doesn't fit our view anymore. That's all. Meaning that if it's not something that we're able to hold or that we continue to hold in mind, it will no longer be part of our experience. Because everything happens as everything that we experience is a result of the view that we're holding. That's how it changes everything. That's how the refined mindfulness, rooted in concentration, changes our entire life. Nothing outside changes, does it? Nothing outside in my life changed. The only thing that changed was the way that I see things and see myself in relation to the impermanent world. And I understand now the process of dukkha occurring and what my part in that is.
I was just going to say, so then, like, the emptiness that I felt, the confusion, the loneliness, whatever was going on inside here, kind of fell away once I had nothing changed, just, like, contact with reality.
Yeah.
And, like, the clarity that I have with it is just, like, you know, unreal. I don't have those confused, deluded thought, you know, thinking anymore. It's just clear.
Developed right view.
Yeah.
Again, that's what it is. That's why it's there. You know, it's the first one. It's the first one and the last one. When you reminded me of Kandana, when he heard for the first time, he heard the Four Noble Truths, the first time it was ever uttered, and he got it. He understood impermanence, but he understood it at such a profound level. The Buddha said, you got it. You're Anakandana. You're the one that got it. First one. But again, that everything relates to that, to trying to hold on to a permanent view of self in an environment that will not allow it, an impermanent environment. Everything is in a process. And if we remember that and we stop holding on to views, then we're a true stream enter. I know I talked about that a couple weeks ago. Then we get into the stream. And the the stream that is guided by the path kind of carries us along as long as we maintain that framework.
I always felt that, like caught in a rip current.
Yeah.
Like going against the stream type of thing.
Yeah, and it's you notice a difference, don't you?
Yeah.
You know? And you can, you know, we're human beings, and sometimes we bang up against the bank and maybe pop out of the stream for a little while, but we can get back in because you made a really good point. Before you came to this, you had no point of reference. There was no way that you could understand it because you didn't know how to look at it. The Eightfold Path shows us how to look at things so we can see things in reality. It's really all that it is, how to see things clearly.
Just interject one little thing that makes a big difference in my life is who I associate with.
Yeah.
This has definitely changed the people that I want to be around. Coming to the Sangha and being very cautious about who my friends are and family and the connections makes a big difference. To help support my the clarity of mind.
Yeah, there's so much in so many suttas where the Buddha reminds us about our associations is just another word for clinging, or it can be. And that doesn't mean that we should cut everybody out of our lives, but it means to choose our associations wisely. Who are we going to be really spending time with and be influenced by? You know, and why? Look at that closely. It's so important. Thank you for bringing that up.
I just want to add something to that because a lot of times, well, in my life, I can't choose who I associate with because of the business that I'm in. And I use that as practice. When I'm with people who I would rather avoid, I can feel the aversion and know that it's like clinging to avoid that. And then knowing that it just, I think, helps me appreciate the people who I do choose to be around a little bit more.
Yeah.
You know, yep. It's like a practice. Like there's a teacher everywhere you turn.
Yeah, there's with the right framework, there certainly is. So, let's go around the room before we don't do that. Matt, good to see you tonight.
Good to see you, John. Good to see everybody. Practice is going well. Kind of along the lines with what Maura was talking about, where there had been, you know, there was a conversation that had happened, and the conversation didn't get, all facets of it didn't really get addressed, teased out, recognized, acknowledged. You know, what do we do these days when that happens? Text. Oh, I forgot this part. So, I sent a text clarifying my you know, comments. And really, really with the right intention of hey, this is what was coming up. This is what I heard. This is where what I was thinking about, what I was addressing in this conversation. And, you know, let's talk about it again. You know? And the message that I got back was very, very defensive and very, very shut down in the first part. And the second part was more, you know, acquiescing. Oh, yeah, okay, I guess we could come back to that and talk about it again. But what I got from it was I'm not in control of other people's reactions to things. And what you know, even the most well-intentioned things can be, you know, not received or not heard or not, or received and heard but not utilized or valued.
Mm-hmm.
So it was an opportunity for me to see where I was clinging to,
mm-hmm.
having to have what I said be valued. And
yeah.
I was able to let go of that and relax that thought and be okay with it, you know. And that's because that's the thing. Like I sometimes hear different things, and I don't want people to hesitate or be constantly deliberating on whether or not what they're saying is right speech or right, you know. And eventually, I haven't said a word in 10 years. I don't know what to say. You know? Like, that's not a way to live.
Yeah.
So,
right.
So there's got to be, you can't live in the hesitation. You also need to be mindful of what you're saying, you know, and practicing right speech. Or how you're saying what you're saying.
Because
practicing. Before you know it, that third text is going out, and then by the time
right.
you're at number five, you know,
then it's done.
Left.
You know, it's gone. So that's that was going. Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. You know, I can give up my right to be right or whatever.
What good is it? What's it
yeah, doing? Yeah. It's,
It's another good example of dukkha occurs and other people are often a part of dukkha. There were numerous times, well, not numerous, there's two that I know of from the Pali Canon, that members of the Buddha's own Sangha tried to kill him. Dukkha occurred in the Buddha's life. And it will happen. He never, the Eightfold Path or the Four Noble Truths doesn't say dukkha occurs, but if you develop the Four Noble Truths, you'll never experience anything like that. Life is part of that. Living in the world is part of having that experience of unsatisfactoriness. We get in trouble when we decide that we need it to be different. We need other people to be different or life itself to be different than it is. It can't be. It just is what it is, including other people. So when we act within the framework of the Eightfold Path, we're good to go. It's not a way of controlling other people, although it usually will diffuse situations, but not always. But we will maintain a mind of calm and peace. Despite what's going on around us, you know, that's the point. Rob, good to see you tonight, my friend.
Things are going well.
How's the hut?
Yeah. I'm working on it.
Okay.
I'm wearing warmer clothes right now.
Ah, good. I'm glad you're here tonight. Gail, it's so good to see you tonight.
I think anatta is such a big thing of it, right? Your eye making and
not self.
I
yeah.
think if you follow the Eightfold Path and think of all those things, you know, if you do it with right intention and with love, whatever you're saying to somebody, and they get defensive or anything, then you know I almost feel like, well, I mean, I'm sorry you feel that way. Like I did everything I could, and
yeah.
you know, and that's not that it's your problem, but you know, like. You can't do anything. And if you just do, you don't
yeah.
have to feel badly because, you
right.
you know, if you did everything from right intention, then it's, you know, like, I'm sorry that they don't have that peace and they can't,
yeah.
you know, can't look at that. I don't know. That came out right, but.
No.
Just, you know that inside, if you, you know, everything came from right intention. And
yeah. That's very eloquent. Then the Eightfold Path is a true refuge. A
and
refuge
you don't
is a place of.
Worry about saying the wrong thing.
No,
you know, if it all comes from truth, and
yeah, and that leaves your mind free. No matter what the other person or the situation is bringing up, you know that you've acted in the right way,
right.
in a moral and ethical way, and then you have. There's nothing you can do about anything, and your mind remains at peace. And it also allows you to, if it's needed, to continue to act. With wisdom and compassion in the situation, because you're not reacting to it, you're not getting defensive or even worse. So, thank you for bringing that up.
But my practice is great, and I'm so grateful. I always get a better meditation here. I find a little better concentration, something in the air.
Yeah, I do too. That's why we charge for it. Better meditation. I'm glad you're here tonight. Mary, it's good to see you.
Yeah, it's good to be here. I feel like I have a lot to share, but just a couple of things. My practice is going really well. I've been much more aligned with, you know, right intention, right effort around my practice. I have been struggling weeks and months with mental fabrications, things having to do with control and fear as it relates to things going on at work or things having to do with my two, you know, getting to be adult daughters and me needing to get through that transition. And so I really, I don't know, I guess about a month ago, I really decided that I really needed to do my homework and spend good time in, you know, the Eightfold Path. And even however many weeks ago that I was here, I was like, you know, I think to Bonnie or somebody I was talking to out there, and you just quietly said to me, you know, like, hello, sweetheart, need a full bath, that's your together, where you're feeling right now.
What else would I say?
And so I said, you know what, maybe I don't know what that means, you know, so I really went and had to look at what does right view mean, because we can all think that we're kind of evolved, I get what right view means, or even like right intention. Well, I never have any negative intention, but like right intention meaning that everything you do is to support your practice and, you know, to support you moving forward. That's a lot different than thinking that I'm a pretty good person and I get up and I do the right thing every day, right? So I created more sophistication around my understanding, like in the groups, what is it, wisdom...
wisdom, virtue, and concentration.
Yes, wisdom, virtue, and concentration. So I kind of took them in those steps. And that's been very, very helpful. I mean, the quality of my mind this week is probably better than it has been in months. And I think some of it is stuff that came up for me at the retreat, you know, mm-hmm. all the way back to May, that have been, like, I know what it feels like to be holding on to stuff. And mental fat. I'm like, I feel like I can write a book on that because it's all been like kind of coming to a head for me. And for me to face something and say, intellectually I know I need to let this go, whatever this is. But I've been like walking around going, how do I do that? And you were like, it's the whole path, Mary. It's the whole path, you know. So I think that that's really working for me. You know, I mean, I think it like got through, you know, like dawns on Marblehead, you know, that it in the last week or so, the work that I've done and the time and attention to try and loosen some of that up in order to let it go. And things that I'm probably letting go from way, you know, for all of us, I guess it goes way deep back somewhere, right? And it feels really good. And I think that I know that everyone around me will definitely be benefiting from it, whether they tell me or not. But, you know, it's been hard having, my 17-year-old is my youngest, and, Grace, who came here, and she's waiting for all her, you know, college applications to come in, and I had no idea it was going to be this hard to... you know, give them their space and not be in control. And I have to do that if I want to have a relationship with them. Good. You know, for the rest of my life, and they deserve it. They're good kids. They have no reason to, you know, be under my control. But I'm, you know, so anyway, in the last week, I feel like I took some steps forward with both of my daughters, the one that's at school and the one that's still at home, to recognize that how old they are, you know, they aren't my babies anymore. Help them understand why that's so hard for me too. But it all relates back to control, and I have overlapping issues, you know, at work and in other places in my life. It's not just with my children. So it's all been really good to open a lot of things up. So even the last 2 days have been with a mind of peacefulness that I haven't had, you know, probably quite a few months. So
right.
It feels really nice. Yeah.
Good. Give yourself a lot of credit because you did it. And isn't it, it's remarkable just to be able to recognize that your quality of mind is different.
Right.
It's more conducive to peace and happiness. I remember the brief conversation we had on retreat, and I mean, it probably began before that, but you set in motion this process of recognition and abandoning
mm-hmm.
or restraint. And it's an ongoing process. And, you know, you're feeling the fruits of that process right now, but it's been ongoing and developing. That profound right view that you're talking about is, the Buddha described a awakened right view as a view that understands at its deepest level dukkha.
Mm-hmm.
You have developed a profound understanding of dukkha. Right view is a view that has achieved abandoning craving and clinging. Right view is a view that has developed the cessation of suffering. It developed the cessation of the First Noble Truth. And right view is a view that has fully developed the Eightfold Path and lives in that framework. And again, everything comes right back to that. And so that's why I whispered that to you the other way, the other day, because, I mean, that really is the answer.
It's as simple as that.
Yeah. And everything else the Buddha taught, he taught because we're so complicated. And the suttas come at these different situations that we come up with in different ways, but they all point back to that. Even this simple pithy sutta, the same thing. Thank you. I'm glad you're here. Diane, how are you tonight? It's good to see you.
I'm well, thank you. And thank you again for your steadfastness and doing all that you do. I appreciate it so much. I'm a little jet-lagged from... just got back from Colorado, where my son is, and I met my grandson.
Right.
And of course he's beautiful and intelligent and alert.
And 5 weeks old.
Someday, or, you know, he's the one we're looking for. No,
right. He's the one we're looking for.
But it was... this practice of the Eightfold Path and meditation has, you know, literally changed my life. I got caught meditating once by my daughter-in-law and once by my son, and I thought, well, that's okay. I mean, they didn't come in and say, "What are you doing?" or anything.
Stop that.
And he walked by the door, and I like to have the windows open and the doors open when I, you know, not the doors, but you know. The bed, anyway. And I thought, well, okay. And there were some days that I only got in 2 minutes to meditate. I sat down with my clock and just that was what I could squeeze in. But just those 2 minutes, twice a day, made so much difference in the way I walked out of my bedroom and walked into their lives. My daughter-in-law was quite uptight for all the in-laws coming and the big baptism thing on Saturday and having everything right, and they didn't write on the cake the right words, and she had to, you know, all this kind of stuff. And so every time she held on to Nathan, Nathan cried and cried and cried and cried because... And she said, it's gas. And I said, well, I think sometimes when we get uptight, you know, things can transfer. But no, it's gas. I'm his mother, I know. And I said, you know, it's okay. And it was just a wonderful experience to go there, which a year ago, 6 months ago even, I was terrified of my son. And what has been mentioned kind of here and there tonight, this is a tough practice. It's not for cowards, because the stuff that surfaces through meditation, and then the time that you experience what has surfaced, feeling the feelings again, and then allowing them to, and just not abandoning yourself, but just letting them go and let the insights flow, poetry there. To me, it's almost exciting. I had some residue stuff coming yesterday from the trip. And I was able to say, oh, your ego, I don't have to pay attention to you anymore. Oh, okay. And it's so freeing to be able to say, okay, that's what that is. That's not me. And I was, what Gail was saying, one of the things that I find quite miraculous, to use, I like, anyway, is that when I see that I've done everything I can and still someone is angry or fussy or whatever, I can love them anyway. Mm-hmm. And that's the first time in my life, I mean, this is the first time I can really say that I'm okay with me and I understand where you are and I love you anyway. Mm-hmm. And it's just, wow, that's relaxing. You know, it's not uptight. It's like, okay, it's just good. Yeah. Maybe this is the way it could be, you know? It should be, or something like that. And it's just, Well, anyway.
It's the way it is.
It's the way it is. It's the way it is.
It's the way it is. It's the way it is.
Well, you know, that was one of the Duke things that came up. It's like, do you suppose I'm really a nice person and people like me anyway? And all this time that I've been thinking that people don't like me is Duke, is my ego thing? And it was like, oh my gosh. Ego wanted to say, Judy, have you missed out on a lot?
Because of me.
Exactly.
But I'm not letting go yet.
It was a big thing, though, because I began to see how this ego wants to protect. That's its job.
Protect what?
Exactly. And it's almost, I mean, what I was going was protect me from love. And that's when I kind of said to ego, aha, I got you there. You don't need to be protected from that. And it's like, I started to say, you know, it's like, this is just using words that aren't probably the right words and stuff, but it's like, I can live my life. I can be in charge of my life. I can work with my mind. I can manifest a good life. I can be. This is good. When I recognize that. I mean, I'm not trying to say. I don't know what I'm trying to say. It just is a good feeling that comes from the Eightfold Path and the practice of meditation. And I'm not done.
Thank you. It really works, doesn't it?
Oh, man.
Maura, it's good to see you tonight.
Good to see you. And Diana, I just got such a... Sorry, sometimes when I laugh, it's a, yeah, it's just because it's so so spot on. And so that was really... I just loved it. Protecting from love. That was just really beautiful. That's a classic line. I loved it. But the only thing that I just wanted to add is what you had said about seeing that desire for what you said to be valued. Mm. That really it struck a chord in me. And a couple of days ago at work, I had this real moment of insight. That was that, you know, I had a view and a perspective because I'm, you know, I have a role that I'm supposed to play at work, and everybody else has their view and their perspective. And I was like, I'm trying to make mine
valued, and so why didn't I just let go of that? Yeah. it was really like, okay, so like what you said, Diane, all right, so they just like, so what? You know? Yeah. I can, and then it was like, I can expend a lot less energy, mm-hmm. and I can feel a lot more love, and just, you know, as one of my colleagues likes to say, we're all just trying to make our daily bread, Maura. And I love that, you know, we're all just trying to make our daily bread, and like just to see everybody as really, the last thing is I had a conversation with a man on the way over here, a husband of a young woman in her early 50s, and he said, everybody in life, and particularly in that setting, wants to do their best. People so want to do their best, and when the challenge is too high to see that, for people to be able to feel like they're doing their best, it's a conflict. But I thought that was so wise for him to recognize what looks totally imperfect is people, and how much people suffer because they just really want to do their best, and they're not always mm-hmm. given the amount of support to be able to do that, you know. You know, to see that, you know, because his wife is really suffering right now. So anyway, thank you.
Thank you, Maura. Larry, good to see you tonight. How are you doing? How's your practice?
I'm doing well. Practice is getting better. You know, now that I'm trying little bits at a time rather than trying to push it too far, too long.
Good for you.
Which is definitely helping, you know. Makes me feel a lot better.
Yeah, it does. Well, I'm glad you're here tonight, too.
Thank you.
Yeah. Give it time. Just keep doing what you're doing. Are you starting to get an idea of integrating the Eightfold Path?
A little bit, yeah.
Good. And you, like, not that I'm using you as an example of how long it can take. it's an ongoing process for all of us. So some of us get it quick, like Mary, and some take longer. But you know.
Some have to come back a few lifetimes. That's okay.
Well, it's not. It's intended to be done this lifetime. I'm glad you're here. Larry, Frank, good to see you.
Good to be here. I appreciate everybody sharing their wisdom. Life is a process, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And learning this different path of living has been pretty, you know, enlightening. That it's available to us all here and now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and is it Diane? Is mm-hmm. your name Diane?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
It is Diane.
Yeah, she said something that like struck a chord with me, and it's like she was having a conversation with her ego, look how much life I stole from you, or something like that. And there's a lot of truth in that. You know,
yeah.
I spent so much time in that conflict, that inner conflict. It didn't keep me from living life. It just kept me from enjoying life to how I could have enjoyed it, because I used to hate people. I avoided people because they couldn't be controlled. I couldn't get them to respond how I wanted them to respond to me. So I used to have this invisible tool belt on me with a zapper in one and a hammer in the other one. I identified with an angry person, you know.
Yeah.
And now, like developing this practice, I have lightened up so much. I love people. I love seeing their reaction to life. I think I heard somebody share that they can let somebody be who they are and still love them anyway. I think that was Diane too.
Yeah.
She said a lot of good stuff tonight.
Real pithy comments.
It's like there's a lot of serenity that I have in my life now, letting life happen as it is. Mm-hmm. No, I don't have to change nothing. Right. I can retire as the general manager of everybody's life and sit back and just like, I have a daughter who I have to call when I leave here, who's studying in London in the spring. And we're doing the final setup. She needs my debit card. She wanted me to take a picture and send it to her. I said, no. So she can put a deposit on her housing, you know. And she's our baby. And, you know, there's a little bit of, reflecting on how wonderful she was. you know? And there's so much joy knowing that she's going to be out of my house for like 6 months. She spends a lot of days at home and she's at home sleeping.
Yeah.
You know, and I love her to death. But yeah, it's cool and I appreciate it. That's why.
Thank you, Frank. As you become more peaceful, other people become more peaceful too, don't they?
Yeah, they're like, thank God, whatever you're doing, keep doing it.
Lorna, how are you tonight?
Very good, thank you. I don't think I have anything quite so stunning to share with people tonight, but just last week my hubby had a little operation on his back, and like some illnesses, when they sort of arise, you need to have personal conversations with them about different things about your body and all this sort of stuff, and which you wouldn't really ask people normally. And so there's been a bit of that, and I've felt more confident and more. I realise that what's happening is just I'm just there. It's just happening to me. It's not personal. You know, it's just we just need to have this conversation. And I've been able to approach what would have been awkward situation, what, you know, before my John Haskell days, would have been an awkward subject to bring up. But I've just sort of brought it up and we've talked about it and come to a solution, and that's that. And just sort of medical stuff and, you know, this sort of stuff. So certainly the Buddha teachings have helped me. And I've realised that I could have gone into, don't know what, of aversion, you know, avoiding things which have built the tension up, etc., etc., which I haven't done. I've just sort of, you know, brought it up and talked about it, and then it's been put to bed. You know, these things just get sorted out and talked about. And so that's been helpful. And I read your article about tonight, the defilements. Just remind me what they are again.
Greed, aversion, and deluded thinking.
Right. When I read those, I really could identify with them. Meaning, I'm beginning to see sort of a bit deeper into myself and into my thoughts than I have before. Before, you know, you say things like, this is like John Haskell talk, you know, and you kind of, it runs over your mind and you don't really catch the full meaning of it. But I'm beginning to sort of see, you know, I identify, you know, with a lot of what you're saying, with my thoughts. I'm more observant of my thoughts in a day.
I think it's good too.
That's about all I have to say, really. That's relevant, really. But you know, just the talks are just laying in my mind, and I think about things, and then they drift away, and I think about something else, and that seems to be how my mind works, you know. And then I pick something, I read something, or listen to a tape, and that sort of stays with me a few days, and I think about that. Sort of, it's not like a big bang, but seeds are planted.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of attitude, just seeds are planted, and then they grow a bit, and that sort of thing.
Thank you. So, like Mary was saying, but I think we're all kind of talking about this ongoing process. And so the more we associate with the Dhamma, with the Eightfold Path and what the Buddha taught, the more we will be part of that process. And the process doesn't just happen, you know. We have to actually engage with it. But once we engage with it and associate with the Dhamma, be part of it, you know, the Buddha said the most important thing, be part of a Sangha, one of the three refuges. When we associate ourselves with those three refuges, then we develop. And really, 6 or 7 months, it's remarkable. Now I'm talking to Mary. It's remarkable the change in the understanding you've developed. You know, you'd like it to be instantaneous. We like to all be kandana. We hear it once and we're good to go. But that's not really the case for most of us. But
as with meditating for quite a long,
as long as we stay in the process, as long as we continue to be in the stream, we maintain our status as stream enterers, the end is assured. We know. How do we know? Because three refuges. Thank you. Bonnie, good to see you tonight.
Nice to see you and everybody. And not good. Copacetic.
That's good word.
Say it too loud.
That's it. Copacetic is a perfect, it's a pithy word. It's perfect.
It's hard to,
you
sometimes just don't know.
Thank you. Before we close with Metta, a few announcements. The Donna Dinner is November 22nd, Tuesday of Thanksgiving week at Love and Oven. There's some flyers out there. Tell everyone, bring a lot of people, come. There's a, on the website, there's a form that if you can volunteer, we're looking for volunteers to help set up and clean up. I think there's 5 or 6 already, so that's pretty good. And I meant to do it tonight, but I'll have it next week. Well, we're going to take up a donation to give directly to Julie Klein, who owns Love and Oven. She's never asked for a penny. She hasn't this time, but I think that'd be a nice thing to do. So we'll have a donation basket out, and hopefully we can give her a nice little pile of money for all her efforts. December 4th, the weekend, or 10 days after that, December 4th is our next one-day retreat, our first in a year and a half, right here. It's a Sunday from 10 to 3. There's info on the website about that, you know, just about the schedule and what's going to go on, kind of a loose schedule, but Matt will be here to lead us in Qigong. Moore is going to be here to participate and lead us in something.
Do we need to sign up for
just
it?
Just give a lot of hugs.
Yeah, but hugs are great. No, just show up. Yeah, if we get to 50 people, we'll have to close the doors.
Did you say you have to sign up in advance?
No. Just be here. December 4th, around 10 o'clock, we'll start.
You're not going to meditate that morning?
No, that's a Sunday. December 4th is a Sunday. So we'll still have our Saturday class. The week after that, starting on December 6th, we're going to start our next, like we did last year, going through the Truth of Happiness course, the 10-week course. It was great last year. We're going to do it again this year. And the same kind of format. In other words, each Tuesday's class will be repeated on Saturday. So if you happen to miss a Tuesday, you can make it up on a Saturday, and we'll go through the winter like that. If we miss a class because of weather, I think we only missed one class last year, we'll just make that one up too.
You're not allowed to come back unless you've gotten to one of those classes, right?
Yes.
if you miss a Tuesday and you don't come to a Saturday, don't plan to come back that next Tuesday.
Yeah, don't plan on it, but nobody's checking, so you probably could. So what did I say? I lost my place.
The retreat?
Yeah, that's it. I think that's the announcements for tonight. I can't think of anything else. All right, let's finish with... What's that?
Your dog got a new haircut.
He did. Mm-hmm. He's extremely cute. Cuter than before. He's developed quite a bit of clinging in me, unfortunately. Let's finish with my words on Metta rather than the Buddha's tonight. So find your relaxed meditative posture and gently close your eyes and gently close your mouths. And again, take a moment to become aware of the sensation of breathing in your body and let that mindfulness of your breath cease any distracting thoughts to the past or to the future, or that may have arisen from our talk today. And in Metta, the first object of our meditation is always ourselves. In generating feelings of deep love and compassion for the object of our meditation, may I be filled with love and kindness. May I be well. May I be peaceful and at ease. May I be happy. May I be filled with love and kindness. May I be well. May I be peaceful and at ease. May I be happy. May I be filled with love and kindness. May I be well. May I be peaceful and at ease. May I be happy. And now bring to mind those that you care deeply for, in generating those same feelings of love and compassion for the objects of our meditation. May they be filled with love and kindness. May they be well. May they be peaceful and at ease. May they be happy. May they be filled with love and kindness. May they be well. May they be peaceful and at ease. May they be happy. May they be filled with love and kindness. May they be well. May they be peaceful and at ease. May they be happy. And now bring to mind those you may be in conflict with, difficult relationships, and generating those same feelings of love and compassion for the objects of our meditation. May they be filled with love and kindness. May they be well. May they be peaceful and at ease. May they be happy. May they be filled with love and kindness. May they be well. May they be peaceful and at ease. May they be happy. May they be filled with love and kindness. May they be well. May they be peaceful and at ease. May they be happy. And now bring to mind each other in this room this evening and all the other members of our Sangha, and extend your awareness outside of this room, across our community, across our planet, across all creation, to include all sentient beings, and generating those same feelings of deep love and compassion for all sentient beings. May all sentient beings be filled with love and kindness. May all sentient beings be well. May all sentient beings be peaceful and at ease. May all sentient beings be happy. May all sentient beings be filled with love and kindness. May all sentient beings be well. May all sentient beings be peaceful and at ease. May all sentient beings be happy. May all sentient beings be filled with love and kindness. May all sentient beings be well. May all sentient beings be peaceful and at ease. May all sentient beings be happy. This concludes our meditation practice for this evening. Thank you all for being here. Peace. Thank you for listening. For more Dhamma talks and articles, please visit crossrivermeditation.com. We rely on donations from our listeners to provide these talks. If you have found this talk helpful in developing your understanding of the Dhamma, please consider a donation at crossrivermeditation.com. This talk is copyrighted and is made available under Creative Commons 4.0 license. Please visit crossrivermeditation.com for use and distribution information. Peace.